Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
From Under the Rock Studios in Los Angeles, California, this is The Strange Chameleon Show, a podcast with style, soul, and sarcasm, along with laughter, love, and listen! Follow them now on iTunes. I promise, you won't, I mean you will be entertained.
Hello. Welcome to the Strange Chameleon Show. Are you okay, Chameleon?
Smithers, jeez, come on. Just get it right. Jeez.
Come on, Smithers.
Geez. Oh, welcome to the Strange Chameleon Show.
Welcome.
Another great night, another great show for you all.
Well, we have a great show for you today, and this is The Strange, along with Chameleon hosting. In a few minutes, we will be talking.
We will be doing both. We'll be talking and taking some information.
Oh, talk about information. We'll be talking with Matt Taylor. He'll be joining us. He's a filmmaker and director of the latest documentary, The Creepy Line. It addresses the manner in which society is at the grips of Google and Facebook and the creepy way in which they do it. It's going to be a very interesting hour for you guys. So stay tuned, stay tuned. Chameleon.
Oh, definitely stay tuned. I mean, come on, it's going to be a great show. You guys are going to be at the edge of your seats on this one.
You were going to do the intro super dramatic, which is going to be super funny.
Oh, yeah. Well, I still can if you like. No.
Google and Facebook coming up.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a very, there's a feud going on between Google and Facebook.
Not really.
MMA fighting.
No. Oh, that would be.
That would be good.
See, Mark Zuckerberg. That'd be interesting to see him get knocked down. How was your Halloween, Chameleon?
I don't really celebrate Halloween that much. I mean, I know our last show, we did a little celebration. If you guys missed it, check it out. Facebook Live.
We celebrate LA Talk Radio. Our own unique way.
We do. Mm. And what I don't know. I got a weird little theory when it comes to this Halloween. It's like, you know, I'm always talking about people who drive like a-holes and they do whatever they want and this and that. And they got kids in the back too and they're driving crazy. And then it's like, on Halloween, you want me to give you some candy after you just this whole year you were an a-hole to me driving? You know, it's like, forget that. But they're kids and you got to give in.
Yeah, it's not them. It's
the
parents.
Not the kids' fault. And it's like, feed my kids with candy. No. How about I don't? And say we did. No. I give them like an apple or something, you know? Give them something fruit.
Give them something that's actually nutritious.
Yeah, there's a lot of fat kids out there, just to throw it out. I'm just saying, like, obesity in the kids. I saw this one kid. All of a sudden, he was just rolling by. He was just like a giant pinball or something. I don't know. He just started rolling all around, and he was so hyper, jumping up around. And he's like, he went to this, like, candy place. You know, when you put a quarter in, you get some candy. And he did it, like, five times in, like, a minute. Or something. He was like, oh, you have more quarters?
I remember this kid.
Yeah. Jeez. And it's just like they just get bigger and bigger and bigger, and pretty soon they're just going to pop.
He was just walking across the parking lot, and there was a lady that walked in, and I thought that was, you know, maybe her grandson. She you know, I thought it would be his grandmother, I mean, and it was just so odd. I mean,
yeah. She wasn't even doing anything.
The mom was already inside, and he was just roaming around the parking lot.
Right.
With no supervision.
Almost got hit and this and that. Crazy. So I don't know. When it comes to Halloween, giving kids, you know.
Yeah.
Everything all right? I'm giving kids candy. I don't know. I'd rather give them Slim Fast or something else, you know, but I'll give it something else to.
Oh, my gosh.
But so I didn't really celebrate it that much, but I just, you know.
That's funny.
I think I end up working that day, so I was tired and just relaxed.
You know what? You know you're old when you just want to stay home and give out candy, which is what I did.
That's what you did.
I'm like, you know what? I'm not feeling the partying. Like I
said, you're chasing him too.
In our previous segment, you know, I'm not really going to go ahead and do a full on celebration, but yeah, I stayed home and passed out candy and they were so sweet. You know, you see these little kids looking so cute with a little firefighter outfit.
Firefighter is a good costume. And, yeah, definitely
but yes,
support that.
I was kind of semi-chasing them.
I mean, they're running away from you. They were like, give me away from this, what crazy lady.
No, it was...
And you're like, have some candy.
They were like going to the other house and no one's really... You know, for a moment, this group didn't... Like, they sort of ditched me and...
Yeah.
I felt kind of like, gosh, that kind of hurt. Got candy. What else? What more do you want? But yeah, I walked right back inside the house and then I'm like, it dawned on me, wait a minute. These brats didn't even say thank you.
Oh my goodness. No, they did not.
No thank you.
No thank you
but
or anything?
But then the second group that came along, the parents were there and they were like, say thank you, you know.
I guess they come in like every once in a while, some herds or like little clusters, you know, where they'll say thank you.
Little clusters.
Yeah.
It was cute. It was good. It was peaceful. But you know what wasn't peaceful on the other side of town over in Santa Monica? Apparently, do not take an Uber ride on Halloween. It was the Uber ride from hell.
Oh my gosh.
So an Uber driver took two passengers hostage.
Wow.
And they claim they dialed 911 as they were in the vehicle. They're freaking out. They said that the Uber driver was suicidal. He was not stopping and he was driving erratically and they saw a gun. I mean, they were freaking out. And then I saw video of like 10 police officers just chasing down this guy, you know, just cop cars. And families are trying to, you know, hold their kids back because there's just so many children trick-or-treating. It's terrible timing.
Yeah.
First of all. So sad. Don't get into an Uber vehicle.
It's just that type of Uber driver. I don't know. I think it's just one of those things where, like, they come and go. It's like, it's very rare that you get a crazy Uber driver. And
is it really rare, though?
Well, I mean, I know they're kind of popping up a little bit now, but...
Speaking of supervision, they need to be supervised, these Uber drivers.
Don't they have built-in cameras and it's all, like, videoed and it's screened, you know, so they know what's going on? They need to implement that. They need to have webcams or some type of thing that streams back to their station so they're always on profile, you know? And just in case something happens, you know, they got that OnStar. They can shut them down.
But see, why is it that you never heard about something like this with yellow cab drivers? Because why? Because
they're already crazy.
You got a full background check.
All right.
You had to get a license. You had to get some type of certificate with your information, all that. You know what I mean? I would see it when I would get into a cab. They had their, like, little, you know, certificate or whatever it's called.
Right. It's just to certify that they can actually drive in this.
To drive you around.
Right.
But I'm serious, though. You never really heard about things like this with them. I mean, maybe once in a blue moon you'd hear something crazy, but not like this. Nothing like this.
Yeah, that's kind of odd why Uber is supposed to be more respected, more like, you know, I know the cab drivers are professional too, somewhat, but they're more like, you know, tie suits, just nice. Like, we're more formal. We'll take you where you, and we're happy to do it. And you get a smile.
It's more of a career, you see. So they took it more seriously. And right. Uber is more of a side gig. I mean, try doing that all day. You'd go crazy.
I do. I drive a lot, but yeah, I'm not at that point.
Not at that point. Yeah, your field requires you to drive a lot. Not really, though. You're in telecommunications, so it's a little different.
It's a little different, yeah. Well,
but we, on Friday, we actually did see the film Halloween.
We did, yeah.
Okay.
Oh boy. My gosh. Remember I was telling you about that idea?
Yes.
Where, you know, it's like a little... It's like a pooper.
In your seat.
In your seat.
Yeah, okay, so if you guys are sitting in the middle section.
No, I just figured you have to pay for it. You pay a little extra and you sit there and that's your seat.
It's a special, yeah,
it's a special
type of
seat.
Theater seat where you, if you got to use the restroom, you just go. It's right there. You don't walk back and forth. This girl had like diarrhea.
Something.
She kept kicking
our seat, passing
by. But you
know what
really disturbed me? Okay, Halloween is a rated R film.
Yeah.
They were little kids. We got a lot of bad parents out there, man.
Bad parents. Bad.
And we
Very
wonder
bad.
Why there is so much violence.
Should be
in
ashamed
schools.
Of yourself.
Why are there so much school shootings and violence amongst children? Because the parents are allowing them violent video games,
mm-hmm.
violent movies. I mean, these kids were 5, 3. I think I heard a baby cry.
I heard a baby. I definitely heard some like Goo Goo Gaga is going on, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm never going to go to another movie theater where it's packed. That's it. Too much commotion.
Too much commotion.
Teenage boys behind me, they kept yapping like, oh my gosh.
Like a little bunch of schoolgirls.
Seriously, like, oh my gosh, I think, oh, Raj, he's about to do this. Oh, he's going to come out through the closet. Watch. Like, I don't need you to narrate this, okay? I paid so that I can view it.
That's
on
true.
Screen.
That was annoying, yeah.
That
I've
was
noticed.
So rude.
Yeah. Yeah. All you guys, if you just say, just sit down, be quiet, watch the movie, and stop interrupting other people, you know, just because you think, oh, you inspect or you think something's going to happen because you're like, oh, it's
Keep
just typical.
Your mouth shut.
Let everyone else enjoy it and be spoiled. You know, because that's what we paid for. We don't, you know, otherwise I could have just went on YouTube on your channel and got the real 411 if you've got one. No, you don't. Anyways, but yeah, overall, it was a good film. And I enjoyed it to a point, but
I like
think
the
there's
end.
Some.
Okay.
All right.
No spoiler. The way that it ends, it's not a spoiler, though.
It's not a spoiler.
Okay. Just know this. Female empowerment towards the end. And the way that it ends, it leads to a sequel.
You think it does?
It does. Come on.
I don't know.
The knife, it ends, it leads up to a sequel, you guys. Just
okay.
FYI.
Right. Okay. FYI.
Now, here's something interesting. You went to a hike. You went on a hike with your pops, right?
Yeah. Just I just went on a recent hike on Saturday, and we went to a pizza place after, mm-hmm. worked up a good appetite, and we went to have some pizza, and there was just a weird, you know, they have all these different names of pizzas.
And where was this?
Well, geez, now you're making me think.
The luggage room.
The luggage room, thank you. It was at the luggage room, and it's over in Pasadena, and is it Pasadena? But yeah,
you
it's in Pasadena.
Can't even remember the city.
Was in Pasadena, and they have all these different names of pizzas, you know, and one of them was called the Fallen Angel.
Okay, this is really interesting, you guys, and I'll tell you why. So, he tells me this. So, he brings the pizza home. I grab a slice. I grab two slices. Something told me only eat one. Can't explain why.
Right.
Now, I'm talking to him. I'm going over a chapter. I'm currently writing a children's book. I'm going over a chapter. The chapter is about Nephilims, in relation to the Nephilims, aka fallen angels, giants that used to roam the earth. And I start getting a stomach ache.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, wow, that's so weird, because the name of the pizza that I got
is called Fallen Angel.
And then I got a little weirded out.
And you fell right into the toilet, didn't you? It was one of those things. You know, maybe that was something in it. I don't know. But I'm not going to get that again. Don't worry.
Yeah, please don't. But moving on from this.
Right.
Weird.
Next
strange.
Time I'll get the black hole pizza. That might be better.
No, strange story. Well, here's something interesting that might maybe concern us. Podcasts might soon become regulated.
What?
There are about 73 million people that tune into a podcast at least monthly, according to Edison Research. Now, here people are free to speak, also those with extreme views. According to Alice Marwick, an expert in extremism and an assistant professor at the University of North Carolina, she says that podcasts are overlooked, yet affect politics in big ways. She also said that they help manufacture consensus because they are unscripted. Quote, podcasts can add legitimacy to extremist beliefs through repetition and reinforcement, end quote. So apparently, Chameleon, audio podcasts are not cataloged by the internet the same way as text, making them harder to track down, which means we can get away with stuff.
Oh, yeah. We get to get away with stuff. Yeah.
Well, I mean, well, you know.
I don't know. What can we get away with?
We can get
away with. We pretty much say anything we want.
Yeah,
we can do whatever.
All right. Well, you know, it's just technically, I guess people are getting away with a lot of stuff and they want to. It can be a little frightening, you know, with all these just wackos out there.
Wackos.
Okay. But is it really a danger zone? It's sort of like, okay, remember when your parents told you not to listen to rap music or don't listen to rock, it's the devil's music. I mean, you know, it's up to you. You don't have to tune in, turn it off, think for yourselves.
Right.
I don't know. I don't ever remember. You know, it's podcasts are like the new wave of music, I think, like what it used to be.
But, well, we got our...
speaking of being censored...
We have Matt Taylor on the line.
He's now calling in. He's behind documentaries like Clinton Cash and Hillary the Movie. Hello, Matt.
Hi there. How you doing?
We're doing great. How are
Hello.
You?
Hello.
I am fantastic.
Awesome. And you're joining us all the way from New York.
New York.
Yes, I am.
Well... Your film, The Creepy Line, focuses on the manipulation.
Well, I got to play the clip. I got the clip for him. Can I play it for you?
He got something for you.
I'd love to hear it. Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Here we go. Let me know if it's too loud. Oh, I love that song. I love it.
That was it? That was it, Camille?
Jay Smith, right? He wrote that? Or no?
Yeah,
he
no,
did.
No, wait, no. That was not a Jay Smith track. No, Jay Smith wrote the rest of the music, though.
Oh, okay.
It was real. Yeah, Jay Smith wrote everything else.
Well, gotcha.
Well, he has good taste.
Yeah, definitely.
He does. He's quite fantastic.
Awesome. And now, Matt, can you please give us a little bit of background on why you titled it The Creepy Line, which we already know this because we were watching it last night and this morning. We love the documentary. It's fascinating.
Oh,
absolutely.
You.
Yes, you're very welcome. And can you please tell our listeners why is it titled The Creepy Line?
Absolutely. So in 2010, Eric Schmidt was doing an interview and somebody asked him, couple questions about some of Google's policies and said the Google policy is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it. And we found that to be a really bizarre choice of words. I don't know anybody who likes to be near anything creepy personally. But yeah, that is where the title comes from. It's out of Eric Schmidt's mouth. It opens the film. It's in the trailer. It's Google's policy.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
And a lot of this has to do with their data manipulation, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, their entire business model is based off surveillance and collecting data, and then how they, you know, wield it is kind of what our question is. What do they do with that data, and how do they treat their customers' data? You know, and that's really what the creepy line kind of delves into.
And now their Google's model is actually don't be evil, which is interesting.
Well, you know, it used to be. They changed it this year.
Oh, did they?
They did.
They must have got my memo.
Yeah, no longer they talk don't be evil for something kind of like try to do good or some kind of another nebulous term. But yeah, don't be evil is no longer their official motto. It's gone now. Which, again, it's another kind of weird maneuver. I don't even see the necessity of dropping the motto. It's just the motto. But yeah, yeah, it's no longer don't be evil. It's something else, kind of in the, you know, we'll try not to do bad stuff.
Right. You know? Jeez.
And it's very interesting because they never really define evil by their own standards.
No, no. I mean, look, as we say in the film, you know, nobody wants to be affiliated with an evil company. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a loose term. You know, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek term. But again, you know, for the vastness of this company and what they have their fingers in, I think it's something that people can't take for granted. They can't take their word for it. And we hope when they see the film, they'll start being more skeptical of these gigantic, you know, super conglomerates.
Absolutely. It's something that everyone definitely needs to check out, especially if you use Google or have a Gmail account, which, by the way, Matt, today we signed up for Proton Mail.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, Proton Mail is fantastic, and they don't track and or read your email.
And I also have another one. Maybe you've heard of it. It's called Start Mail.
No, I haven't heard. Is this another safe email service? I have to add that to my list.
Yeah, well, the servers, they're over in overseas. I believe it is Switzerland as well.
Yeah, Switzerland is a good place to have your servers. They have very strict rules about these kinds of things.
Yes, and they also...
good, that's what we hope the viewers start doing, exactly what you're doing, which is start taking precautions to protect themselves and protect their data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I have Start Mail, and that one you have to pay about $50 a year, though it is a year. And it's a service, and with Proton Mail, I know that you have they have different subscriptions, and if you want more, then you have to pay about $4 a month. It is, but I got the free one for this one. I'm paying already.
right.
I'm paying Start.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I mean, free is not really free, and I think this is kind of one of our big points. You know, with the film, like, there is a cost associated, and is the cost of a free email really worth having your data sold to advertisers or even governments or even law enforcement? Is that really worth the cost of free? So, you know, I think that people have to start moving out of the idea that everything is just free, because it's not really free at all.
You're absolutely right, and your film does expose the basic truth that you just mentioned, which is we are the product. And with that said, Matt, do you believe that perhaps people should be seeing royalty checks in the mail as a result of our information being bought and sold?
I know, huh?
Well, I mean, look, why not? I mean, if Google has can pay off, you know, a fine of billions of dollars, you know, where did that money come from? It came from them selling your data. That's where it came from. So, yeah, why shouldn't you get something for something that is yours? Now, they would say, well, you use the service, so you have, you know, this is the cost of using the service. But, you know, in no other company except for Google and Facebook and a couple of others have this kind of relationship with their users. You know, Apple doesn't. We buy Apple products. We don't like them. We don't buy them.
Correct.
So, you know, I think that, you know, it's not outside of the realm of possibility. And honestly, I've heard suggestions in the regulatory space about, you know, public trust and various things like that to help people kind of monetize their own information. That's your information. Why shouldn't you get paid for it?
Good point. And Jaron Lanier, he suggests paying for services online. And he also made the point of which several years ago, it would have been crazy to pay, for example, to watch television programs. But he referenced services like Netflix, Amazon, HBO. So this idea can actually work, if not for the better.
Well, absolutely. I mean, look at the quality of programming you get on HBO. You get what you pay for. Mm-hmm. You know, I love my HBO subscription. I'm happy to pay for it. I need to know what happens in Game of Thrones, you know, or Westworld. Like, these are high-end products, $10 million episodes of television, you know. And so the thing is like, you get what you pay for. And I think that the pay model, I mean, I think the subscription service thing is about to blow up next year with Disney releasing their services, and we're going to see a whole lot of shakeup in that space. But, you know, I think Jaron Lanier is right. you know, we are already accustomed to paying for all sorts of things. You know, how, why is this any different?
True. It's correct. And now with regulation, since technology is moving faster than government, and that's a loose quote from Elon Musk, do you think that we could ever see any type of regulation that could actually meet our standards?
You know, the tricky part is, and as you know, you've seen the film, we don't suggest make a lot of suggestions, because in my personal opinion, mm-hmm. most of the solutions we have right now are 20th century solutions for 20th century companies. These are 21st century companies. They have completely different business models than, say, even Microsoft or even the classic Standard Oil, which everyone likes to bring up. So I think that the regulatory space is going to have to probably start from the beginning and rethink some of their solutions to deal with these companies, you know, because, again, people say, oh, you can break them up. But, you know, they're in everything. I mean, can you imagine breaking Google up if they're controlling the GPS in your car? They're controlling, you know, the software that lets you make phone calls. I mean, these are very complicated scenarios that it's really the business model is what we have to rethink. The idea that they collect your data and that's how they make money, that's really what needs to be rethought. Mm-hmm. And that's where the regulators should probably take a look there first. But we're going to have to proceed very carefully so we don't damage the economy. You know, because right. again, they're in telecommunications, they're in education, they're in transportation, they're you know, parts of the Pentagon sit on Google servers. So, you know, they're everywhere. They're in places people don't realize. So we're going to have to be very careful how we proceed in a regulatory fashion, you know, as we come up with solutions.
It's very true. Good point.
Yeah. I mean, it's good that you're doing this and you're making people aware. You know, I got family members that have the Alexa in their home. And my theory is, like, you know, that they're like programming their own AI just by having them in there. So as they recognize your voice, they recognize certain sentences and what's, you know, what's current and what are the kids saying these days. And it's like they're programming that already. So all of a sudden when the AI comes out, it's just like, hey, what's up, bro? You know, they just know how to talk to people. And it's just like, that's my theory. I think they're just kind of
programming them.
We're programming them. Exactly.
Well, sure. I mean, look, like, you know, Google's big, like, they're kind of their big push is to be your brain, you know. And so what's interesting about the home devices, you know, I have a HomePod because I'm an Apple guy, but in which I hear Siri references Google. So that's another Google product, you know, mm-hmm. by proxy. But what's interesting about these products, and we talked about this in the film briefly, is that, you know, they want to just give you one answer. They want to predict what you're doing. They want the thing to suggest things for you to do. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Again, these are all surveillance platforms. Google Maps is surveillance. The Alexa is surveillance. The Google Home is surveillance. You know, these are all for surveilling you, collecting your information. You go to the store, they want to know that. You bought some bread, they want to know that. You know, you listen to this song on the radio, they want to know that. You watch this show, they want to know that. Why? Why do they want to know all these things? Where does the data go? What do they do with it?
Right. Well, I have an Android.
It's spooky.
It is.
I have an Android, and I've always had an Android, but it's like, are they listening? I mean, is that really true? I mean,
well, you were mentioning a story when you mentioned Hillary in a conversation.
That's true. So what happened is I basically, like, I'm having a conversation, my phone's in my pocket or whatever, and I'm having a conversation with someone, and I'm talking about I'm just going to use a reference, Hillary. We're talking about politics or something. And then it was specific of what we were saying. And all of a sudden when I, you know, like, do you really think she sent that email and whatever? And all of a sudden I'm just looking up randomly later that night, you know, Hillary. And that's the first thing that popped up, you know, the scandal of the sending the email and things like that. So it's like, are they taking in these information? If they are listening, they're hearing my ideas, my thoughts, my projects, whatever, and then are going to, like, exploit this? Or I don't know. It's like, it's kind of spooky.
It's totally spooky. I mean, look, would you want, like, a random person standing in your living room watching you all day long? I mean, think it's an absurd idea, right? To say, oh, it's
well,
a random person.
No, I'm just kidding.
A random person. sitting in your living room recording everything. You said, no way, that's insane.
No,
well,
I know.
Well, that's what's happening. It's just you can't see them. It's invisible. You know, it's true surveillance, like true, like the NSA wishes they had what Google had. I mean, the Chinese obviously are linking up with Google, you know, to create Project Dragonfly, you know, in China, a state that is known for controlling data and exerting huge amounts of censorship, you know. So them and Google are just a perfect partnership in communist China. So, I mean, think about it. This is the company that's controlling all of the information in the entire world right now.
It's very interesting how, you know, of course, for obvious reasons, your film focuses on Google and Facebook. And Google is the brain of everything, you know, so to speak, on the internet. And you've got Facebook that is like the king of our social manners and just social media in a sense. So combining the two, would you say they're like the pinky and the brain?
You ever see that cartoon?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm old school, love Pinky and
yeah,
the Brain.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Facebook gets a lot of, like, takes a lot of flack. And I think they're bad as well. I think Google's worse. I think Google has managed to escape a lot of criticism because Facebook gets so much criticism. I also think that, you know, some of the things that Facebook does are more overtly naughty. For example, we talk about the experimenting on depressed teenagers. You know, Google isn't doing that. They may be doing it, but it's not in a way they would get caught or be seen, whereas Facebook is doing it overtly and getting caught. And, you know, I like to remind people that the origins of these companies are very different. I mean, Sergey Brin and Larry Page were creating something to bring information to the world. You know, Zuckerberg created a website that's like Hot or Not. I mean, you know, people forget that it was to rate women. So in the Me Too age, it's kind of offensive in a way, mm-hmm. in a way, but nobody ever brings that up about Facebook. That's what it was, you know? And so I think that Facebook has kind of a seedier origin. And I think that Facebook has kind of a really kind of weird, grotesque, like, you know, reason to get everybody online. Whereas I think Google may have had better intentions in the beginning. But now they've kind of veered off course from what they had started as.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I can. I see how you're right about Facebook getting a lot of flack nowadays, and Google is sort of sneaking out of the radar.
Jumping out of the bushes.
I mean, look, like every other week, there's a story like, oh, 100 million users have been leaked out of, you know, 100 billion people's data has been stolen from Facebook, 50 million people. You know, if this was any other company, and you got a product that malfunctioned as much as Facebook, would you continue using it?
No.
You only have to go to a restaurant and have one bad experience at a restaurant to never go back, you know, and do something else. But for some reason, with these companies, we keep coming back. It makes no sense. If you had a car that malfunctioned, you get another car. If you had a television that looked like crap, you'd go get another television. People usually don't put up with this kind of failure from a company. And the problem is when your TV doesn't work, well, that's irritating. When Facebook doesn't work, well, Russia gets your bank accounts and steals all your money and hacks your life and ruins your life. That's the kind of consequence for these companies not protecting the information, which, by the way, they took from you without your permission.
Do you think that people keep going back to the platform because they have, say, for example, 5,000 friends? So it's like this spider web where for the sake of their quote-unquote friends, they keep going back, and that was really the trap.
Well, sure. I mean, look, I think, again, separating the two companies, I think with Google, we have less of a choice because Google controls 90% of search. And frankly, they're the best search engine. So with Google, we don't actually have a choice. With Facebook, on the other hand, you know, I mean, how will I know what my aunt is up to you know, like I'd have to call her otherwise, right?
We don't want to do that. No,
yeah, we don't want to do that, you know? So, like, you know, I mean, there's a certain thing where you are hooked into, you know, hey, look, I think fundamentally the products, they work and they're awesome. And I think Facebook and Google did a lot of cool things. I think they still do a lot of cool things, you know, but I think that in the context, especially how we explored in the film, with in democracy and in censorship, they have veered way, way, way off course. And, you know, due to the fact that they are now controlling all of the information in the world and everything that we see and don't see, and they're mapping our perception on everything, I think that a company like that needs to be either completely transparent to the users, or it has to be completely honest with what its motives are. You know, that's just a fact, you know. Otherwise, you know, my film could be censored if they don't like it, you know, and you've seen the film, you know, we tried to be as fair and balanced as possible.
Oh, absolutely.
But the thing is, yep. You know, you make an effort to do these things, but you know, when they control, you need the option to watch the film and say, hey, I don't like your film. And I'm saying, okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But at least you had the option, you know? And so I think that's the problem fundamentally, is that they just control what we see and don't see. I love the fundamental ideas of networking. I love the fact that, like, you know, I mean, I don't love the fact that my parents are on there all the time. That's weird. But, you know, but you know, they you know, my sister shares her kids' photos, which I'm completely against. You shouldn't put your kids' photos on Facebook.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know,
oh,
all
yeah.
These kinds of things, they share their photos and you get to see things and you get to interact. That's amazing. That's great. I love them for that. And I want them to stay on kind of their original, you know, mission, you know. And so, like, I think that the problem is when they start messing with things that shouldn't be messing with, mm-hmm. You know?
So if they basically just stop using our information for their own greater good, everything would be okay, right? We would continue using Facebook for the family matters and so forth. And but if they didn't do what they were what they're doing, and Google, we would be safe, correct? Essentially,
well, look, I think it's like this: if this is the business model they want to function under, then they need to let their users know. If they're going to say, look, we're going to it's all in the small print, right? So they do actually say this in the small print. And the problem is people don't read the small print because the small print is impossible to understand.
Right.
So they do say that, hey, look, if you talk on an Android phone, we own all of your activity,
that's
including
right.
Your talking on the phone, your text messages,
oh,
all the
boy.
Websites you visited. If you go and touch a website that has Google's tracking cookies on it, we own that movement.
Wow.
So they do have that. Yeah, they have that language. It's there. But I don't think people understand that, right? I don't think they are fully aware of it, which is why we made the movie, so that they can start becoming aware that, look, you go to a website and it's using Google Analytics, well, they're tracking you and they're collecting that information. You need to know that. And so I think if people want to opt in, truly opt in, then they should be able to. You know, if you're like, you know what, I don't care, I'm going to do this. But I don't think people know. And I don't think that's really kind of very ethical to collect people's data, you know, knowing that they probably don't know.
Yeah.
And so I would like them to know. And if you're cool with that, then go for it. But, you know, I think, again, if they collect your data and once they move into the political sphere, well, that's an entirely different situation. You know, and at that point, that's where regulators or whoever has to step in with some kind of solution, because at that point, it's actually dangerous.
Yeah.
I know that a couple of years ago when I got my first iPhone, I actually read I went through the agreement where you
good
click,
for you.
I accept. Thank you.
Yeah.
And now when I share the information that really shocked me with my peers, which is all the photos that we take, they own that because it's on their device.
They own it.
And people, they're shocked. And it's like, yeah, it's right there. I read it. It's because we're using their device.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. They don't know. You know, mm-hmm. Maybe they should know and they should read the things, but they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that those photos, I mean, think about that. If you're posting photos of your kids, like Facebook owns them, that's freaky. Right. You know, I don't want Facebook to own any photos. I don't have kids, but if I did, you know,
right?
I don't want anybody. I wouldn't want anybody to have to own photos of my children and be able to use them in who knows how.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, it can also be very dangerous. I know we've discussed this before, where even just having those families have those bumper stickers on their family.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that.
You know, their kids' names.
They got them all listed, you know, all 20 of them, you know, and they just kind of just break it down. Hey, this is Chuck and Phil. And, you know, it's like, why are you doing that? You know, there's creeps out there that like stalk mothers like that, you know, it's just not right.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially in LA, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Definitely in LA. But Elon Musk, he was on a podcast interview with Joe Rogan. I don't know if you saw it. It was circulating. And
said, infamous.
Yeah, okay, right. He did say that AI is more dangerous than nuclear weapons. What do you think about that?
Look, I think AI is first the coolest thing ever, and it is the most dangerous thing ever.
Yes.
It's interesting because we actually have released additional content outside of the film. I think we released 30 or 40 minutes of additional material. We actually talk about this, about the cars, the self-driving cars, and how what they basically do is they if you send out a bunch of cars, they're mapping the world, but they all learn at the same time, right? So unlike people who I learn something and then it takes time for me to tell you and then it takes time for you to tell someone else, they all learn at the same time, right? So it learns one thing and a million of them know it. And so I think with AI, you know, and it's, look, it's machine learning and these things are already embedded in our phones and iPads. It's already kind of in the early stages. But I think the thing is, you know, Google built, if I remember correctly, an AI that learned chess in 4 hours, 1,500 years of human knowledge in 4 hours, and then was capable of beating the greatest chess masters in the world.
So
if you can build a technology that can learn, now it's chess is complicated. It's not as complicated as, say, brain surgery or something, but this is the early stages. But if you can build something that can learn that much of human knowledge in 4 hours and then beat us at it, you know, you've got to, the dangerous, who's building these things and what are their intentions? You know, and I think that's really what it all comes down to. I mean, Google and Facebook and even, you know, and Apple as well, they're doing a lot of machine learning stuff, are building these things in these kinds of pet projects in their companies, and they're fiddling around with things, and they don't really know to the full extent of what it will do or how it will affect things because, you know, they're just building them. Oh, what if we build this? Or what if we build that? You know, and some of these things, you know, look, we have decades of science fiction that talk about this very thing, like, oh, we build a monster and then the monster is Frankenstein and all these kinds of things, you know, and it kills us. So I think it's not, I like AI, I like the idea of it. I'm more terrified about who builds it, you know, who is the person who kind of imprints their ethics into the machine. I think they built an AI recently, some kind of chatbot or something, and it ended up being like a total racist robot. You know, it kind of went to this level of where it like just learned all these bad things, and they had to shut it down. Who's building these things? You know, and what kind of safeguards are being put on the people building these things? You know, so they don't build a, you know, the Skynet, the Terminator. You know,
right?
I mean, it's science fiction. We laugh about it. But so was the iPad and so was the cell phone. You know, that was all science fiction in the 60s. And we, you know, science fiction is really not that far ahead, you know, of where we are today. So, you know, I like the idea. But I don't want, you know, some evil dictator or totalitarian company to
put it
build
in the wrong
evil
hands.
Robot overlords, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. No one wants that. But it seems like we're building our way out of humanity in a sense. The AI robot Sophia was granted a visa when in the past she has said that she would kill all humans, and the robot you just mentioned, the AI, is Microsoft's Tay, who had to be shut down when...
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
When Tay started tweeting positive Nazi messages. Do you think that it's a result as these corporations and are building a new world away from humanity, what makes us human, and keeping that sacred in a way?
I mean, look, these people who, you know, these definitely the Google people for certain are utopians. You know, I think, you know, the 20th century entrepreneurs are a little different than these newer entrepreneurs. You know, I think Bill Gates was definitely into market share and making money. I definitely think Steve Jobs was definitely a little bit more utopian in life, but kind of business and practice. You know, but I think these new guys have achieved a level of power to, you know, build the world the way they think the world should be built. And so, what they view as humanity may not be what we view as humanity. And I think that's really ultimately, again, the ultimate issue. Like, did you ask to live in the world that they're building? I mean, we already have to live in a world that a bunch of other people built that we probably don't like anyway. You know, and then we got to add these guys to that as well, who actually have the power to control information or to control what you do in your day. And so, you know, they can augment it with technology or whatever. But at the end of the day, they have a utopian vision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have stated they want to, you know, anticipate what you think. You know, they want to tell you what to think. And I think that's a really terrifying, you know, future. I don't want anyone to tell me what to think. I want to make my own mistakes and make my own progress.
Right.
Exactly. That's how we all learn. We don't want people and these machines to tell us how to run our lives.
It's almost...
No, I mean, look, I joke that, you know, the younger kids, you know, we had Hurricane Sandy in 2012. You know, if you knocked out all the cell phones, like, they wouldn't know how to get anywhere because they don't use their memories anymore, you know,
right.
Use their phones. And so, you know, we joke about it, but it's not entirely untrue, you know. And so if you knock out parts of these, if the technology goes away or it changes, you know, people end up relying on these things to a huge extent. I mean, there's just as many traffic accidents with all the safeguards and cars, simply because people aren't paying attention as much anymore because they think the car can augment their abilities. And nothing augments you looking over into your blind spot before changing lanes, no matter how many sensors are on the car. You know, so that's the kind of thing where, you know, we have to also, you know, save our own humanity by not giving it up to the technology and kind of, you know, conditioning ourselves out of, like, just being safe.
You know what? That's very true what you just said. A few years ago, I had a shoot. I had to go up to a desert. It was a desert shoot. And obviously, the directions were very complicated. I did rely on maps. And it told me to make a left. It did not look like there was a roadway there. It was just, it was nothing but bushes and so forth. So I did not turn left. Then later on, when I finally got there, to the location, they were all, the director was wondering, where is so-and-so? She comes in this Jeep, this girl, and it's all banged up. And she tells this story how it told her to turn left, and she just turned left without looking. I mean, I was aware, and I'm like, I'm not going to turn left. This does not look safe. But she just mindlessly did it, and she just, her Jeep
She trusted Google.
Her Jeep was all banged up.
No, it's true. I mean, look, we have to, it is ultimately up to you and I to protect ourselves from whatever. I mean, anything. I mean, look, we opt into these things, but in the future, I mean, you can have all these technologies, but you got to look and you got to think,
Absolutely.
And you got to really kind of be critical of things that people tell you. You know, obviously, you know, we talk about fake news in the movie, and we have to be critical and skeptical because that's what keeps us, you know, alive and progressing as a species, you know. And so I think we have to be careful not to go into a place of complacency and hand over our free will to these companies, because frankly, I don't trust them, and I see no reason to trust them. Why would I trust Google? They leaked all this information. They see me as a unit, as a product, That doesn't seem like a very good relationship to have, you know, with our overlords.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? Your film does a great job at tackling what exactly fake news is, because right now we are seeing people disregarding information, saying, oh, that's fake news, when because there's a very, very tricky line there in between, because it can go either way. However, your film documentary, it does a great way of explaining that thoroughly. And did you want to add anything to that, Chameleon?
Yeah, I mean, you just hit the nail on the head right there.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, though, Matt. I apologize.
I'm having so much fun.
I know.
It's been absolutely wonderful.
Thank you so much. It was great having you on the show. It's now on iTunes. You're very welcome. The Creepy Line. You can
download
catch
it. iTunes and Amazon and iTunes. You can do them all.
I said iTunes. It's available to also host as a special screening. So if you're interested, go to thecreepyline.com to find out more. Again, Matt, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Matt.
Huge pleasure. Thank you for watching the movie. Have a great evening.
Thank you. You do the same.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.
All right. Well, you heard it from him. Download it. Check it out. It's a great film. Thank you all for listening to The Strange Chameleon Show. And remember, if you don't want Google all, jam on!
Have a strange night. Have strange dreams.